வாழ்க வளமுடன். Who am I? Let's start with the most obvious one that is in front of us. Am I the body? I have a body. What is it comprised of? It is comprised of various organs, from the brain to the heart to the legs to hands to various inner parts. There are various organs that we have within the body. Let's take the brain. Brain comprised of 8,600 crore neurons, cells are packed inside this 1.2, 1.3 kilograms of the body, which seems to control all our functions, autonomous and voluntary functions, involuntary, voluntary functions of the organs of the body. Likewise, every part of the body is comprised of cells. Just as 1.2 kilogram, 1.3 kilogram, brain itself has 8,600 crore neuron cells. Can you imagine how many cells will be there in the body? 60, 70, 80 kg of our body weight containing billions and billions of cells packed together. Each cell is a factory. It has its absorbing connections. It has its inflows. It has a lock and a door also. The cells are always locked. Insulin is the key. Correct, doctor?
Yes.
So the insulin comes and knocks and says, hey, I have brought food, please open the door. The cell opens the door, brings in or invites glucose inside, and then there is a kitchen inside the cell, which is?
Mitochondria.
You are a doctor too?
No.
Look at that. Very nice. So what does the mitochondria do? It burns. Why is it called a kitchen? Because it burns glucose, converts into energy, uses that energy, and in the process there are free radicals. Oxygen is produced, in that there is an electron that goes missing. So this free radical decides that it needs to grab an electron from nearby elements, nearby atoms. It tries to grab, and that creates a ripple effect, and that creates a multiplier effect there. And the cells try to readjust itself by grabbing a free electron from a plant-based food, nutrition. This is how nutrition is important. If we eat a lot of phytonutrients, phyto is plant-based nutrients, it contains with itself a lot of free energy particles, free atoms, free electrons, which is then supplied to the cell, the missing oxygen atom, then grabs it and does not disturb the surrounding cell area. And hence the telomere, which determines the age of the cell, the length of telomere does not reduce. Otherwise, continuous grabbing of it, it reduces its length, and then eventually the cell will die, or it will start getting confused. It will start to multiply. Once the cell knows that it is going to die, it starts to mutate. So uncontrolled growth of the cell happens within the organ, which is what we call as cancer. So if we want to avoid all kinds of diseases in the body, then we have to supply the body with phytonutrients. As long as the body consumes or has in itself plenty of phytonutrients, this oxidative stress is reduced. Let us analyze what happens or what is inside a cell. A cell is made up of all kinds of molecules. There are oxygen molecules, there are hydrogen molecules, there are carbon dioxide molecules, there are various kinds of molecules that are there, glucose molecules are there, there could be other kinds of molecules that are there. All these molecules are made up of atoms. Atoms are made up of electron, proton, neutron. In some molecules like hydrogen atoms, for instance. There is only one electron, one proton. There is no neutron in that. So if you look at our body, it is made up of these energy particles. So we cannot say we are the body. Also, if we are the body, then what is this life force we are feeling? What is the mind we are feeling? Body is available for all kinds of inanimate objects also. A stone has got a body. Shape is not the shape of a human, but you can sculpt it to make it look like me. Or a statue can be made out of wood or any other metal. Doesn't mean that it has life. You can mimic the shape and the form of a heart. You can even attach some motors and pumps and things like that, a compressor. Heart is not really a pump, it's actually a compressor. Am I right? Right. It actually compresses. Otherwise, it's normal. It compresses. It compresses up and compresses down like this. Okay. As it compresses down, it brings in blood, compresses up, blood goes out, etc., etc. It keeps happening. So, heart is constantly given a shock by the brain. There's a shock up, there's a shock down. Shock, alternative shock happens, which is what we feel it as heartbeat. We can mimic this. There are machines that are available where you can create a bypass. When you do bypass surgery, what you're really doing, you're actually removing one blood inflow into the heart and putting into the machine, creating, let's say, complicated surgeries are created in such a way that you're actually stopping the heart and restarting that heart after a few minutes. Very complicated. Otherwise, today angioplasty and things like that has come where you just insert something, burst it, and you're able to do that. Fantastic advancement has come in medical science. There are life-saving treatments that are available today. The body cannot only be defined as you or me. There is something more than the body. So the next question that comes to our mind is the mind me? Am I the mind? We meditate. When we meditate, we go to subtle frequencies. We meditate at Agna, Duryam, then we go up to Dwadasangam, to moon, to sun, to then expand it to the universe and go beyond the universe. We expand our mind to that almighty force, Shivakalam we call it. In that state, there are no thoughts. It's a coma stage. Self-induced coma stage. We are not losing consciousness. We are merging ourselves with the total consciousness. So in that state, there is no mind. But we exist. So we cannot say we are the minds. I cannot say I am the mind. Mind also has no shape, form or color. It takes the shape of the things that it imagines. For instance, I go to a temple, I look at a Hanuman statue, I close my eyes and I see Hanuman statue in my mind. And I pray to Hanuman. Whom am I praying to?
Hanuman.
Are you sure? Where is Hanuman?
We are praying to ourselves.
We are actually praying to ourselves. We are not praying to Hanuman, or we are not praying to Shakti or Shiva. Close your eyes. Once you close your eyes, it's only your own mind that has taken the shape of the deity. So we are praying to ourselves, which is a wonderful practice for a child. You cannot explain Brahmanyama to a child. If I ask a child to sit down here, try to explain to the child that here is Shakti, here is Shivam, this is the self-compressive surrounding pressure force. The first thing he will say is, okay, can I go see, play outside? I want to play with the surrounding pressure force outside. He is more interested in playing in the garden than think of this surrounding pressure force. So how do you get him to focus on God or focus on one object at a time? To improve the concentration and to remove distraction from the mind, a child was given certain practices such as idol worship, pranayama, yoga. These are at best pratyahara and dharana techniques. Pratyahara is avoiding distractions, ignoring distractions. Dharana is concentration, focus. But these are not dhyana techniques. Dhyana is focusing your mind on your own life force. So as we meditate on our life force, the mind becomes very subtle. It takes the shape of the subtlest of energy particles. So it is able to visualize the entire universe and go beyond the universe, or shrink it to the subatomic energy particle size. So it has the ability to shrink and expand at will. So it doesn't have a shape of its own. You think of blue color, the mind has taken the shape of blue. You think of your favorite sweet that your mother makes or your wife or husband makes at home. Nowadays husbands also cook, no? They have to, otherwise they won't get married nowadays. So you know the pre-qualifications. Correct, Amma? No, I'm just asking. So your mind takes the shape of your favorite sweet. You recall the sweetness. And then, you know, this is a standard problem. Mother makes some excellent sweet. My mother used to make excellent rasam. And then I got married to an Iyengar family. Their rasams are totally different. It took me some time to get adjusted to it. So I should have admitted it was taking some time to get adjusted to it. After all, taste is an acquired thing. When we were born, we drank mother's milk and grew. Mother's milk is the most tasteless food in the whole world. We don't have the taste buds to taste protein. Soya, for instance, is tasteless. Any protein is tasteless in our milk is basically protein, we can't taste it. Then how did we acquire the rasam taste? I want only that rasam taste. I used to tell my wife that you are not making rasam as well as my mother does. Go to your mother's house only. Why you are eating here? So then, no. What I mean to say is I am taking time to get adjusted to it. Say like that. Okay. All right. Eat now quietly. The mind has taken the shape. It has acquired the characteristic. And then it has taken the shape or the taste or the color or the smell or whatever that we think or we imagine. It is able to take that particular characteristic like rainwater. Rain falls. Rain has no shape or form or color or taste. It has no characteristic. It is just pure water. Distilled water falling from skies. But as it falls on the ground, it acquires the taste of the ground. Sirvani water, Kaveri water, very tasty. Okay. Aliyar water. Because the soil contains with it certain minerals and certain chemicals, compositions, natural elements that give it a unique flavor. Similarly, river takes the shape of the land that it flows in. Doesn't have any shape. Just like that, our mind has no shape. It acquires the shape and characteristics of the things that it often imagines. Therefore, it is important for us to train our mind to focus on something which gives us the divine characteristics. We are not the mind, therefore. So, who am I? When we talk about the mind, we talk about focusing our life force on mind, on our life force, on our Kundalini Shakti. So, am I the life force? Again, ask yourself. When we focus on Muladhara, we are able to feel the pulsations. Agna, we are able to strongly feel it. Muladhara is a little difficult sometimes for us to feel. Initially, it may be a little difficult. See, it is like staying in a hostel and coming back home to mother's house. Or you get married, go to your husband's house and then you come back to your mother's house. What is the first thing you do? Always thinking of food only. Men.
Relax.
I have come to my mother's house. No, I don't have to cook. I don't have to think of that man who is constantly pestering me to do something or the other. ஓகே, ஐ டோன்ட் ஹேவ் சில்ட்ரன், பேரண்ட்ஸ் எல்லாம் மாதிரி அப்பா ஸ்லீப், அம்மா ஐ ஹவ் கம் ஹியர் மா டு ரெஸ்ட். மை மதர் வில் பி திங்கிங், ஐ தாட் வென் ஐ தாட் வென் ஐ காட் யூ மேரீட் மை டியூட்டிஸ் ஆர் ஓவர். Now this lady has come back and she is sleeping here and wants me to continue to take care of her. Look at this woman. Your mother's duty never gets over when the marriage happens. Then you know other things also will come. The children will come. Grandchildren will come. You have to take care of grandchildren also. Likewise, when the life force Kundalini Shakti goes to Mooladhara Chakra, it is going back to its home. So it likes to rest. It likes to be its usual, casual, you know, happy-go-lucky self. So it's a little difficult for us to train our mind to focus on our life force at the Mooladhara Chakra. So Agni is easy. Duryam is also reasonably easy for us to feel. Now, when we focus our mind on our life force, we should ask ourselves, what is the tingling sensation? What is the life force energy particle that we are feeling? What is that vibration we are feeling? Is this the life force we are feeling, or is it something else we are feeling? Can somebody tell me, what is it that you are feeling when you feel the tingling sensation? What is it? What is the physics behind it? Are you sure you are actually feeling the energy particle or some transformational function of the energy particle? In what form are you perceiving the biomagnetism? Pressure. That vibration, feeling is there, no? That tingling, a beautiful pulsation, is nothing else but a pressure sensation. The pressure sensation is possible only when there is a magnetic conversion that is taking place. So what you are observing is the magnetic conversion taking place from the formative dust particle or energy particles that are free flowing and circulating within the body. So we have to ask ourselves, now if we are the life force, now this life force particles producing pressure sensation, how is it possible for us to perceive that? How is it functioning? What is this pressure sensation? Where is it coming from? This particular sensation is possible only as long as there is life within the body. The moment the life comes out of the body, the cells disintegrate. That means this magnificent net that is binding the entire body together is the fevicol, the glue, invisible net that is binding this body together. Likewise, there is an invisible body for invisible net for all animate and inanimate objects. There's some kind of a net that is maintaining the shape of, let us say, this water bottle here, or this mobile phone, or this cloth, or a stone, or a bench, or this bag, or spectacles that we are wearing, or the phone, or the, you know, pen that we are using, notebook. So everything seems to have an integrity. But how long will that integrity be maintained?
Till the life form is there.
For a life form, as long as life is existing, the integrity is maintained. Once life goes out, what happens? It disintegrates. It disintegrates, cells become loose. Slowly it becomes one with the earth, or it evaporates, or it vanishes. If you burn it, it basically becomes air once again, it's gone. So this entire life force is nothing else but coming together of free-flowing energy particles. So stay with this energy particles for a moment. Let us ask ourselves, where else do we find this magnificent net? Where else do we find this integrated body?
All the living beings.
All the living beings.
Plants.
All planets.
Planets, yeah.
Then? In all Panchabhutas, we see this integrated form in various shapes and forms and various composition in earth materials, water is also a form of integration only. A homogeneous coming together of certain formative dust particles, electrons, protons, neutrons, namely, if you look at water, if you just say there's only water molecule in ocean, then it is hydrogen and oxygen that is coming together. But that's not the only thing that is there. There are sea creatures, there are salt, there is mineral, there is carbon dioxide. There's all kinds of things that is there in that. It's one of the largest carbon sink in the world is the sea, which is why calcium carbonate is formed, which is the seashells. How the seashells are formed? It's actually drinking carbon dioxide from the air and converting it with oxygen and converting that into calcium carbonate. And calcium carbonate is sunambu, which is what becomes the shell. We can see there are probably millions of such minerals and compositions. So it's not just water molecule. So it's, but we see a homogeneity about this. We see some integrity about it. We see compositions of various kinds in various parts of this ocean. Likewise, there is fire, there is air. Air also has got so many different types of air compositions. With hydrogen, helium, oxygen, barium, beryllium, etc., etc., etc. There are several such gases that come together to form the air medium. For 10 miles in the sky, there is air. And then another 10 miles we see, there is a thin layer. There's a thick layer and then there's a thin ozone layer, which is not just oxygen, it's full of ozone. A layer is sitting there. Another 10 miles, it's nicely, beautifully protecting this earth from radiations, from various other compositions. And what maintains, who maintaining all of this? If you look at this earth is spinning, it's not stationary. It is spinning at an extraordinary speed, about 1000 miles an hour. It is spinning around its own axis. So earth is spinning. So let us ask ourselves, we throw something up in the air and let it levitate for a few minutes. Will it go to Pollachi? It should, no? Earth is spinning. Is the air spinning? Why can't we just take an helicopter and just tap there? Wait. San Francisco will come, get down. Or Perth will come, we'll get down in Perth. Possible? Earth is spinning from west to east. Correct? Just take the helicopter, just stop there. Why you want to fly? Don't fly. Just stand right there. Just levitate there. Wait for about some, 17, 18 hours. It has to go this side because earth is spinning like this from west to east. But you have to go east to go to Perth. So you have to wait for it to go to San Francisco, cross the Pacific Ocean and then reach your Perth and land. Tadak, you land on. Possible?
No.
Why not?
Gravitational force.
What do you mean by gravitational force? Ask yourself, what is this gravitational force? First of all, it is not possible for us to just levitate and go wherever we want. Because the air is also moving. Not only the earth is moving, the entire air medium is also moving at a reasonably equivalent pace of 1000 miles an hour. So you have to work against that movement or go with the flow to move from one point to another point. So if you are going to levitate, you are also going to be moving along with the... So no matter how long you stand up above RDR, you will remain there only. You will not going to go away from RDR. Because the air is also moving, the object will also move. Unless the object has a force which is different from that of the air medium that is moving, everything is moving. This room is moving, this flask is moving, this bag is moving, this book is moving, this mat is moving. All of us are moving, but we are all moving at a relative pace. So it appears like we are stationary. And in the process of this earth's movement, rotation, spinning, there is a repulsive force, centripetal force, which pushes lighter particles away. So you leave a balloon, it goes up. There is also a centrifugal force, which is your gravitational pull, which brings all the heavier particles closer to the center of the earth. So you put a stone, it falls down. So anything that is spinning has two forces acting on it, a pulling force and a pushing force. Likewise, this energy particles which is spinning within us has a repulsive force and there is a pulling force, a compressive force that brings our body together, makes our body expand to some extent. We were not 5 foot, 6 foot when we were born. We were just a small baby. But then we started growing because there is life energy particles that is attempting to escape the Earth's gravity, because like balloon, it is a lighter energy particle. So the body grows. There is some point of time when this free-flowing energy particles escape velocity reduces on Earth's gravity, and this escape velocity becomes equivalent. So we grow to a particular height and we stop. We cannot keep on growing. There is sufficient magnetism for us to withstand the gravitational pull. Therefore, as long as we have sufficient magnetism within our body, when we want to get up, we jump out of bed. When we want to sleep, what do? We jump into the bed. We fall asleep. Look at the way English is beautifully explaining it. We jump out of bed, but we fall asleep. So you don't need to have put any effort at all. You just relax yourself, damal, you will fall down. You will go to bed. And the body replenishes itself. When you go to bed, you feel tired. But the body, somehow you have stopped eating, you have stopped drinking. Two known sources of energy is gone. So you are breathing, so sufficient energy is coming from there. But the body is also absorbing energy, radiation energy from various planetary objects in the sky. And it is absorbing energy, nuclear fission energy is coming from the center of the Earth, and the body is able to absorb that magnetic energy also, and it is also converting the food that we have eaten, etc., and replenishes that with biomagnetic energy. When there is sufficient level of magnetism, there is an automatic reconnection that happens. If we need 10 units, if we reach, let us say, 7 units, we remain alert, awake, refreshed. The moment 7 unit comes, we are automatically up. If you continue to sleep beyond the 7 units, you will only dream. You will not be able to remain awake. You will not be able to sleep also. So this is somewhat in a vegetative state between sleep and, you know, complete awareness. But you are dreaming. It's sleep with dreams. But if this level of magnetism goes below the minimum stock level, let us say 5 units is the minimum stock level. 5 to 7 is that state between wakefulness and dream, sleep state. And 5 units, below 5 units, automatic disconnection happens to the brain. Even though the brain is only 2% of the weight of the body, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4 kilograms, that's all it is. It consumes 25 to 30% of the biomagnetic energy in the body. Once the body has less biomagnetic energy available in a transformed state for the body, then the brain says, okay, let me shut it down. This is falling asleep. You feel tired, eyes feel droopy, you fall asleep. And then once the sufficient magnetism is replenished, again you remain awake and you get up and you do your duties. So this entire process seems to be well governed and optimized for our body to sustain itself. When it reaches a point when the body says, no, I can no more get up, then you lose your motivation to live. You don't want to live. I met one man in Gujarat when we had gone with my family. This man's grandfather was a freedom fighter. But he lived beyond India got freedom. He dedicated his life post-freedom, post-1947, towards uplifting the society. So normal people will come, or peasants will come, poor people will come. We'll ask him, Dada, please help me. This problem is there. Government is not giving me this. Government is not giving me this. This minister is corrupt, etc., etc. So he will go and fight. He used the same Gandhiji's method of satyagraha, and he will go put satyagraha in front of the government officer or the minister. He even got a minister changed because he was corrupt, and I'm talking 1953-54 time frame. There was one point of time when a cycle rickshaw fellow came to knock at the door. He was unable to get up from bed to open the door. That day he decided, my day has come. So he fixed a date. He said, 3 months from now, on this day, this time, I will die. So slowly he started reducing his food from that day. He said, no, I have no more motivation to live. I will live to serve the society. No, I don't want to live because the body doesn't cooperate with me. I become too old. Now I will become a liability for them. Exactly that day, that time he died. He didn't commit suicide. Naturally he died. That is the power of the will. Our mind is capable of doing things like this. Extreme things also is capable of doing things like this. Rishis, Siddhas have attained Jiva Samadhi like this. At will they have let go of their body. We have seen or heard of such stories. Likewise, the body and the mind and the soul seem to function together in harmony. As long as this harmony is maintained, we feel hale and healthy and energetic and good about ourselves, wanting to get better, wanting to spread the goodness, allow the goodness to develop in us, learn new things, teach others new things, become a better human being, and try to find out who we are. There seems to be consciousness that is doing 3 very important functions. It is cognizing. Cognition is common for all life forms. It is experiencing. When we come to RDR, we sit in this room, we meditate. The energy that we feel in this room will not be the energy that we will feel in our homes. This is a intense form of magnetic energy, spiritual energy, because millions of people have come here and meditated. Swamiji has lived here right above this room, and therefore this particular space is very intense in terms of spiritual energy. When we meditate, we automatically transcend to that stage, that level. So the transcendental feeling that we get meditating in this room is very unique and is very beautiful, it's very divine. Because consciousness, which is functioning within us as cognition, is now experiencing it. The experience is also due to this consciousness only. Not only it is experiencing this transcendental state of mind because of meditating in this wonderful temple of consciousness in RDR, we are also able to create a record saying this experience is different from the experience that I have got in my home. So there is discrimination. It creates an indelible record. The next time when we go home, when we meditate after 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks, we tell ourselves we should go to RDR once in 3 months or 6 months. That energy level is totally different. So we take an affirmation, a resolution. No matter where we are, we should come here to meditate. This is a place for meditation, the place for recharging our batteries. The discrimination ability comes because of consciousness functioning within us as awareness. It is conscientious consciousness. It is conscience. Because it is constantly observing itself, creating new records, new imprints, questioning those imprints, questioning those records, and recreating further imprints, further records. It is the same consciousness that is functioning in a particular lower form, in a lesser form, lesser intensity form, in a different characteristic. It is functioning in an animal, in a plant, in non-living things also it is functioning. However, there is no cognition experience and discrimination. The difference between living and non-living things are cognition, experience, discrimination. free-flowing energy particles within our body allow us to perceive. The perceptional capability, sensing capability, the discriminating capability, perceiving pain or pleasure, peace or ecstasy is very unique to living forms. In non-living form, in a stone, there is no cognition and there is no experience and discrimination. There is no perception of pain, pleasure, peace or ecstasy because it has only Panchabhuta elements. Free-flowing energy particles don't exist within those non-living things. But there is pattern. There is precision. There is regularity. Pattern because these formative dust particles came together to form electrons. Electrons slowed down, became protons. Protons slowed down to become neutrons. Neutrons, protons, electrons came together in various compositions and formed a pattern. There is a pattern for diamond, there is a pattern for coal, there is a pattern for iron, there is a pattern for steel, there is a pattern for aluminium, there is a pattern for plastic, there is a pattern for petrochemicals, there is a pattern for coffee, there is a pattern. You can see that? There is pattern. There is pattern not only in these earthly materials, there is pattern everywhere in the universe. Now there is a precision also. It is very precise. Water's specific gravity is almost 1.99 something. Almost 1. That means it will flow in a particular shape and form. It will function in a particular specific way. It behaves in a specific manner. Boiling point of water is 100 degrees centigrade. Cooling point of water where it becomes ice is 0 degrees centigrade. You cannot change this. This is precise. When the temperature goes to 0, water will become ice. No questions about it. This is science. This is a fact that has been studied, recorded very well. This precision is also existing within our body. It is very precise the way the body functions. Circadian rhythm, for instance. There was a beautiful experiment done by one person sitting inside a cellar, made all his windows dark, made sure that there was no external sunlight coming into the room, but he had even removed the clock. But he decided to live there for a few months. And he is the first person to have discovered the circadian rhythm. He realized that his sleep pattern followed a precise time clock after a few weeks. You will go to sleep at a particular time, you will wake up at a particular time. And then he realized the pineal and, you know, the circadian rhythm that the clock, internal clock maintains. The body doesn't require a clock. Mind doesn't require a clock. We have an inbuilt clock system in us. Everything functions precisely. Likewise, we see precision everywhere in the universe. Not only there is pattern and precision, there is also regularity. Earth will spin at 1,000 miles an hour every once in 24 hours. It spins around its own axis. 75,000 miles per hour, the Earth will spin around the Sun. So 365 days it will spin. Sun itself is at 9 crore miles away from our Earth. 19 lakh times larger than our Earth, spinning around its own axis once in 25 days. Can you imagine this? Moon is at 238,000 miles away from Earth, spinning around its own axis once every 30 days and also circling around the Earth once in 30 days, which is why we see only one phase of the moon. If you say this is moon, if moon is not spinning around its own axis, if it spins around the Earth, we will see the back of moon when it comes to the opposite side. We are on the Earth. You understand? You see this bag that I am moving around this bottle, you will understand what I am talking about. We will see all sides of the moon. But that's not how we see. We see like this. We see only one side of the moon where we have written road on this purse here. That is the only face that is facing the bottle. Because if you remove this, what it is doing is actually going like this. It's spinning. So moon is also spinning. Anything that spins will have
the push
and the pull. There is a pulling force and there is a repulsive force. Moon is pulling. The tides are formed here, low tide, high tide. The waves on the earth, oceans, are caused by the moon's gravity. Moon remains practically at the same location, 238,000 miles. Maybe it is moving 1 inch for every 100,000 years or something like that away. So it's a very, in a small way, it is trying to move away from Earth. But it is so minuscule, we can even ignore that. Earth is at 9 crore miles away from Sun. And that is spinning. This is spinning. Then Mercury is spinning. Venus is spinning. Earth is spinning. Mars is spinning. Jupiter is spinning. Then Saturn is spinning. Pluto, Neptune. All the way we can see all of these planets, planetary objects are spinning around each other. Jupiter has got several moons. Saturn has got several moons. And Mars has got a couple of moons. We have one moon. There's no moon for Venus, no moon for Mercury. But we can see these celestial objects functioning in a pattern. Today, Mars is retrograde. Meaning what? It is not going anticlockwise. Retrograde means anticlockwise. Vakram. Vakri, we say, no. Doesn't mean it is going backwards. It appears to go backward because it is spinning at a particular velocity, or spinning at a particular speed around the sun. We are spinning at a particular speed around the sun. We are at 9 crore miles away. Mars is at 14 crore miles away from sun. So it appears at certain angles that Mars is going backwards. It's not going backwards. It appears to go anticlockwise. And therefore we say, okay, it has certain effects, it will not give certain effects, etc. So, it's an astrological study. It's an empirical study. Astrology is nothing else but a logical, empirical study documented in a well set of rules, defined set of rules. There is no intuition or there is no magical powers involved in study of astrology. It's pure logic, pure science. But the science has been now misunderstood by many people or projected for commercial purposes as if it is a magical science that you can, that only a few people can learn, nothing like that. Anybody can, even a child can learn astrology. Come to me, I will teach you astrology. It's very, very easy. Super, super easy to learn. Within 1 hour, I will teach you to predict. You can start prediction. In exactly 1 hour, you can start predicting. It's so easy. Because it is logic, as long as you can think logically, you can learn astrology. Doesn't even require mathematical calculation. At some point in time, it was required because there were no computers. Today, one press of button, you'll get your natal chart, you'll get your horary chart, you'll know where the planets, you'll know where the bhavas are, you will know exactly how to start predicting. So simple to do that. Because we are able to observe a regularity in these patterns, which is functioning precisely. So there is a pattern, there is a precision and a regularity. So we should ask ourselves, hey, wait. There seems to be pattern, precision, regularity in the way our body functions, our mind functions, our life force functions. Similar pattern, precision, regularity is present in inanimate objects, in whether it is water, rain, river, oceans, mountains, etc. We also see similar pattern, precision, regularity everywhere in the universe. So there must be a connection. Now, sun is not the only thing in the celestial universe. We see similar suns everywhere. There are stars. We see hundreds and thousands of stars in the sky. One fellow was looking at the stars and then he said, what are you doing? One fellow came. I'm counting the stars. He said, what, foolish fellow? How can you count? I finished counting. What do you mean you finished counting? Yeah, I counted. There's exactly 1,35,495. How do you know? If you have any doubt, you count it yourself. Not possible to count. That's a joke. But there are millions of such stars that are uncounted or unaccounted for. What we see with the naked eye, for instance, last night, I don't know if you've seen, it's a beautiful sky last night. There was almost full moon. Another 3 days, there'll be full moon. 6th of January, there'll be full moon. Now we are talking 4th January today. No? Today is 4th of January, right? So just 2 more days to go before we can see the full moon. So the bright sky, no cloud, there are stars. Right next to the moon, there was Mars. And a little further away from here, which there was Jupiter. Fantastic sky. What a beautiful sky we saw. And there are so many stars. Hundreds of stars. Now, some of these stars are several light years away. Meaning, light travels 3 lakh kilometers per second. I know. Abba. Imagine the speed. Now, that light that has traveled from there has traveled for years. 2.5 light years. Nearest star from our sun is called as Alpha Centauri. Huge distance away. Several million miles away. Light has started from there. It has traveled 2.5-3 years to reach us. The light from the sun takes about 8-8.5 minutes to reach us. So the sun light that we see outside right now has actually started from the sun about 8.5 minutes back. 8 minutes back. So it's 8 minutes old light that we see. The light that we see from the star is several years old. We don't know what that light is today. We will know only after some 2.5-3 years.
This is something I realized when we visited in Australia, visited the planetarium, and we were watching the sky. And a scientist over there, he said, see, this star is it's already gone into what is the state of the star when it is
known? Death of a star. Black hole.
So what you see is just
it's an illusion. This happened several years ago. That's true. So these are also functioning with a pattern, precision, regularity. The whole, you can see, imagine now, what we see as stars in the sky is only from Milky Way galaxy. We do not see an Andromeda galaxy, the Andromeda galaxy, which is the nearest galaxy. We do not see with our naked eye. You need high powerful telescope to see such galaxies. Our sun is 19 lakh times larger than our Earth. But the galaxy, Milky Way galaxy itself, is width to width, the diameter of this galaxy is 100,000, 1 lakh light years in distance. That is, you start traveling light from one edge of this Milky Way galaxy. When it travels to the other end of the Milky Way galaxy, it would have taken 1 lakh years. That is the distance. Can you imagine the distance? Light can travel 3 lakh kilometers per second. Can you imagine the distance of Milky Way galaxy? And the scientists are saying, this is a baby galaxy. It's a very small galaxy. It is not even one of the biggest galaxies in the gamut of things that is there in the universe. This galaxy doesn't even count. It is too small. Andromeda galaxy is several million times larger than the Milky Way galaxy. And by the way, Andromeda galaxy is also very small. So there are galaxies which are million times, millions and billion times more than the Andromeda galaxy. Like that, there are millions of galaxies in the universe. All of them are functioning with a pattern, precision, regularity. Is there a traffic constable anywhere? All of them are spinning at extraordinary speeds. Any traffic jam, ma? Any accidents that you know of? Suddenly, Mars, moon, Earth says, no, why are you keeping that moon? Give it to me. Padak, take it away. Possible? Everything is functioning with a pattern, precision, regularity. Now you think of this entire universe functioning with such beautiful pattern, precision, regularity. It is a huge ball, huge globe of millions of galaxies functioning together. And go beyond that. There must be a force that is governing this entire universe together. There must be consciousness that is governing this entire universe. It must be the same consciousness that is governing our body, our mind, our soul. Let us dwell on this. Scientists believe that there is dark matter. One group of scientists believe that the whole universe appeared with a big bang. But there is a hole in that. There is a problem in that. If Big Bang came into existence all of a sudden, they believe that it came out of dark matter, but there is no proof of dark matter yet. In philosophy, we talk about this dark, mighty fluid, but this is philosophy. Scientists cannot use this and say, okay, borrow the concept from philosophy, which is convenient for them. If you are approaching it from a scientific point of view, you have to prove where is dark matter, what is dark matter. That proof has still not been discovered by the science. Second, if so much of big blast happened, big bang happened, there must have been helium of an extraordinary amount in the universe. We don't even have half of that. Third, the surface of various galaxies and universe that we see must be uniform, which is not the case. We have different kinds of shapes and forms that has appeared. That is also not explainable in the process. Like this, there are many loopholes that has already been pointed out by the scientists themselves. Logically speaking also, sudden Big Bang could not have happened. There seems to be a beautiful sense of evolution that is taking place. So it must have taken over millions of years of evolutionary stages. Number two, there is a theory of Maya, which says that what you see is all illusion, nothing is true. That seems to be too far-fetched an imagination. There is theory of permanence, which says nothing is changing, everything is same, nothing is created, nothing is destroying. That also doesn't seem to be believable. It's not like everything is permanent. Things are appearing, disappearing, moving, changing, transforming, etc., etc. Energy is coming, energy is changing into various forms. Stage transitions are happening, magnetic transformations are happening, perceptions are happening. We cannot again believe that theory of permanence is accurate. Therefore, we have to dwell and research into the theory of unified force propounded out by our Guru Yogiraj Sri Vedatri Maharishi. What is he saying? He is saying that there is a dark, mighty fluid, there is gravity, that is all surrounding pressure force, which is beyond the universe, which is self-compressive, which is highly permeable, which has consciousness, time, force, and plenum. What is plenum? Let's start with plenum. Plenum is inexhaustible source of energy, which is a characteristic. We can see plenum in action in everywhere that we see. For example, let us say in this room we have an air conditioner, you switch on the air conditioner. The cool air that comes spreads everywhere and fills this room. As long as there is a reasonable amount of homogeneity of air in this place, it's a matter of time where you will feel this cool air everywhere in this room. This is the characteristic of plenum. This is a functioning, practical example of how plenum functions. Likewise, it fills, it is a self-fulfilling, self-filling, it is self-governing system, like our body. Body is another beautiful example. It's a self-diagnostic, self-healing system. Doctors' medicines accelerate the process of curing. But body may decide, okay, doctor, thank you very much. Your medicines, I am not interested in it anymore. I may have gotten cured with the same medicine yesterday, but today the body will refuse to get cured with the same medicine. So the doctors give up hope. They say, okay, the body has given up. Nothing we can do. Please take the body back. Because the body has, somewhere the consciousness has reached its capacity of self-healing. So it cannot heal itself, it cannot cure itself. Sometimes the body loses its capacity to diagnose its problem also. So people have extraordinary pain threshold, for instance, or they can't feel it. They lose their sight, they lose their limb, or you know, some parts of the organ, some body part stops functioning, pancreas stops functioning, so it doesn't produce insulin, or type A, type 2, diabetes comes, etc., etc. There are all kinds of malfunctioning happens in the process because it has reached a limit. But otherwise, the body is a self-healing, self-diagnostic system. But this is a transformed, dynamic, functional state in which we are able to perceive this. But an untransformed, static state, plenum is inexhaustible. We see a dynamic universe. We are now in an expanded state beyond the universe. We see the universe as a big ball functioning with millions of galaxies. Now go even beyond that. This huge ball has now become a football. Go beyond that into the universe, into the almighty space. This football has become one cricket ball size. Go even beyond that, expand even beyond that. This cricket ball has become one lemon. Tennis ball. Tennis ball has become one badminton ball. Badminton ball has become one even smaller, even smaller. Keep going, keep going, keep going. Now it has become one small speck. Kadugu. Okay. Mustard seed it has become. And that also has vanished. This is truth. This is the almighty static space. This is the almighty consciousness. It governs everything. Now, is it static in a pure static state, nothing happens? Yes, but it also has a characteristic of self-compressive, kinematic, quivering pressure force. Kinematic quivering. Quivering is not vibrating, but it is quivering. In its quivering state, due to its self-compressive nature, a fold is formed. I'll show you. I'll give you an example. Let's take this cloth here, and in this cloth, I put pressure on it. What happens? There's a fold is formed. So let us say there is a thing. I press it like this. There's a fold is formed here. Now I take this and I compress it in all direction. What will happen to this fold? It starts to spin. Like how you take wheat flour, for instance, take it, put some water and you press it in all direction. What happens to the wheat flour? Nice globular form it takes. Likewise, this fold starts to spin. Now, when it starts to spin, the divine, mighty divine force is now inside this. It is this force that is making it spin. So there is an amount of mighty divine force which is present within this dust particle. This is the divine dust. This is the formative dust particle, energy particle. That particular mighty divine force is the mighty divine fluid. Now it is potent magnetic force. That is within this formative dust. It is spinning. Now another energy particle comes. In this energy particle, it is spinning at an extraordinary speed. Therefore, there is a repulsive force. There is also this mighty fluid which is compressing everything. Therefore, there is a pulling force. There is a pushing force. There is a pulling force. Yes.
So, I'm able to understand the concept you are saying, sir, the self-formation dust with the kinematic force and everything. But why we call it mighty divine fluid?
Because it is a force that is in a fluid nature. It is not liquid. There is a difference between fluid and liquid. Swamiji did not use the word liquid. We use fluid as a synonym for liquid, but that is not the way Swamiji meant it. It is not a solid state, it is not a gaseous state, it is not a liquid state. It is a permeable state. It is a highly permeable divine fluid, therefore. He could not use any other word for it.
That is the meaning, right? Permeable means penetrate.
Penetrating. Highly permeable, highly penetrative, and surrounding this formative dust particle is this divine mighty fluid. Mighty because it is the mightiest of all mighty forces. Therefore, it is almighty force. So, this spinning particle is spinning. Another particle is spinning. Now, what is this almighty force is doing? It is all surrounding. Therefore, it is compressing these two. So, one spinning particle here, one spinning particle. Can they merge? Cannot. Because there is a repulsive force. And when they come together, the faster spinning, lighter particles becomes the satellite for the slower spinning, larger, heavier particle. This becomes a nucleus, this becomes a satellite. This now together starts to spin at an extraordinary speed. An electron is formed. As it spins, as the electron together, the whole thing starts to spin, the amount of mighty fluid that accumulates increases. And the particles begin to spin at an extraordinary speed, increases, speed increases. As the speed increases, one of the formative dust will get thrown out of this. As the energy particle is thrown out of this, some of the mighty fluid also will start to travel. Keep that there. Picturize there and keep. Now, these number of subatomic, number of formative dust particle inside the subatomic energy particle electron is reducing. Many formative dust particles would have come together to form a cloud, which is all functioning in an unison, like a sun, like the earth, like the moon. This is spinning at an extraordinary speed. One particle has come, divine fluid has also come out. What happens to that, I'll tell you in a minute. Now, as it's spinning it, this particle has come out. Now, the number of energy particles are coming out, so the amount of spin also comes down, because the amount of mighty fluid also comes down. Therefore, it reduces its speed. An electron becomes a proton. Simple. And as more and more formative dust particles are thrown out, ejected from that proton, it becomes a neutron. Now, the surrounding pressure force pushes these electrons and protons and neutrons together. One electron, one proton come together to form hydrogen. Two neutrons, two protons, two electrons come together to form helium. Eight protons, eight neutrons, eight electrons come together to form oxygen. So now from Akash, which is the subatomic energy particles, electron, proton, neutrons are the Akash. In the Akashic state, air has come, hydrogen has come, helium has come, oxygen has come. Now when two hydrogen atoms, one oxygen atoms come together, you will have 10 electrons, 10 protons and 8 neutrons, because hydrogen doesn't have neutrons. 8, 10, 10 has come. When they function together, they create a boundary. They form a spinning particle together. Now it is a water molecule. In between, as some of these gases come together, they combust. They undergo this magnetic fluid, starts to heat up. This is hot air or heat or fire. Now, as the air molecule, water molecules come together more and more and more and more and more, as these kind of liquid molecules come together, they condense at various temperatures to form earth materials. Water becomes ice. Likewise, many such earth materials have evolved. Now, it is only Panchabhutas. Now, inside that, life energy particles have also entered. Free-flowing formative dust particles without formation of Panchabhutas are now circulating there. Life form has come, amoeba has come, plant has come. From the plant, seeds are coming, seed has fallen down. Unsprouted seeds transform themselves into worms. Worms then form cocoons, from there emerge insects. Insects shed their wings, fall down and start to become crawly, keepy things, lizards and etc. Crawlers begin to jump and start to have wings, becomes birds. Birds lose their wings and again fall down, becomes animals. A lion-like animal and an ape-like animal came together, human-like life form evolved. And that human-like life form then mated with the ape. And this, what we now see as humans, have evolved. But it has taken millions of years of transformation. So when you think of this, the almighty force, the divine force, has transformed itself into first formative dust, subatomic energy particles, electron, proton, neutron, atoms, molecules, panchabhutas, and inside that various types of combination of life forms, and finally it has emerged as human beings. As long as it was in a non-living form, there was only pattern, precision, regularity. There was no perceptions that was there. But once the free energy particle started moving inside this this non-living form, suddenly it's become life forms, and the life now has the ability to perceive, it has the ability to cognize, it has the ability to experience, it has the ability to discriminate, and it has now started creating all kinds of imprints in the genetic center. All these free-flowing energy particles must have a center, because as this ejected, thrown out energy particle comes out with the divine fluid, it begins to go in a straight line, but that almighty force will strive to compress it. So the straight line overflowing, like how water overflows from a cup, as this divine fluid, mighty divine fluid starts to spread, it cannot go in a straight line. If something is pressing, it bends down. And again, this will spend, it will go up. Spreads, then comes down. Goes down. It goes and bombard against the nearby formative dust. From there, another mighty divine fluid will emerge. It will try to go straight line, bend like this. Exactly the same way this particular bending and moving came and hit. Likewise, this will start. Another hit, tick, tuck, 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 tuck. So now this whole universe will now have this spreading wave. This spreading wave is magnetic wave. This static, potent, mighty fluid in the form of potent electricity, potent magnetism has now started spreading as a dynamic magnetic wave. Depending upon where this wave clashes and transforms itself, it becomes pressure in Akash, it becomes sound, air, it becomes light in fire, it becomes taste in water, it becomes smell on earth, it becomes mind in living beings. Where there is a brain, then there is perceptional capability increases. Man, who is the ultimate evolutionary element, evolutionary stage of this almighty divine state, has now got the ability to discriminate and also get rid of these imprints that we have inherited over millions of years, achieve purification of the genetic center, otherwise called as salvation. With that, we get prepared. Salvation is the pre-qualification, precondition to become a self-realized soul. This consciousness that has evolved as you, that has evolved as you, you and me, has now got the ability to realize where it has come from. And that alone is the purpose of this beautiful birth. May the Almighty Force and our Guru shower you with good health, long life, enough wealth, peace, prosperity, fame and wisdom. And may you achieve salvation and self-realization. Who am I? You are divine. I am divine. Every one of us is divine. Every one of us is God in a personified character. God with imprints. God with characters. God with certain impurities. We get rid of our impurities. We get rid of our imprints. We become one with that almighty force. May you achieve the purpose of your birth. Be blessed by the divine.